I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hello and welcome to A Pint of Cthulhu Behind the Bar with Neon Rot. Looking at the game Below Dwelling Sewer Mutants today. How about you introduce yourself?
My name is Willow, or Neon Rot as I go on. Go by online, and I make tabletop RPGs and sort of tabletop RPG adjacent things. I've been doing it for quite some time. I think about not even quite some time actually. When did I start? About 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And I just started making RPGs because I like making art, and I saw a way to kind of combine the two, inspired by things like Morkborg and other sort of art-forward zines, and started putting them out as games rather than just pieces of art, and people started liking them.
Sounds great.
That is quite an impressive backlog of games for only 2 years.
I cannot be stopped, and even by myself.
And nor should you be stopped. The more the merrier.
Matt, how about you start us off with our first question?
Well, yeah, we have one question that we ask every single guest, and that is, what drink would a pint of Cthulhu be?
What drink would a pint of Cthulhu be? I'm thinking, does it need to be like a drinkable drink, or
it can be horrendously bad.
Oh, we've had all sorts already, so do your worst.
Sure. Okay. I mean, the first thing that kind of springs to mind is the Dagon sort of fish people. So like a pint of fish eggs and lime cordial.
Oh.
Caviar and lime cordial.
I'll put it on the list, Matt.
You can bloody drink it. I ain't touching it.
Hey, maybe it's a coffee goal. Or coffee. What do you pronounce as?
No. I mean, we've had salmon vodka before, and
I think someone said seawater or like kelp and something in a drink as well.
Yeah. So do you actually drink the drink, or...?
Well, we haven't yet, but we're having having a meet-up of the podcast members, all but one of us, because we all live in different places, in June, and I am going to be attempting to make some of the drinks that have been mentioned for the podcast.
Okay.
I'm going to laugh horribly as she throws
I will be
up.
Fine. I'm also going to try and badger Matt into trying at least one of them. Maybe one of the nicer ones. It's just like absinthe and vodka or some shit.
That's easy peasy.
Caviar and lime.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll be able to get caviar, but I'll see.
Does Tesco's do caviar?
I wouldn't trust
brand.
It.
So I'm going to Google that. Jay, whilst you answer this question, I'm going to Google, does Tesco's do caviar?
Oh no, what have I signed myself up for? So, you have an impressive category of games, but we're here mostly to talk about BDSM.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about it.
So, BDSM, Below Dwelling Sewer Mutants, is a trauma-inspired, sort of sludge-punky tabletop RPG. It's a sandbox RPG where you are horrific mutants in a sewer world called the Undermuck, and you go on adventures in the Undermuck. It's sort of a big world of mutants and sewers, and the cisterns are like towns and villages populated by horrific mutants, and the tunnels between are like roads, and there's kind of, you know, legendary giant mutants wandering the tunnels, and forests of pipes and stuff like that, and humans are not really seen, and if they are, they're prey. You get to eat them. And there's a very much sort of like meat eat meat world. So if you beat something in battle, you get to consume it. If it's a, you know, a mutant or a crocodile or a waterlogged raccoon, you get to eat it, and you randomly mutate depending on the thing you just ate. And in doing so, you roll on a table, depending on the DNA. And that's how you get your abilities and your skills as a character. So you never know how your character is going to change. So from the beginning of session one to the end of session one, your character may have changed drastically, both mechanically and thematically.
Super interesting.
Huh. How long have you been working on BDSM?
BDSM was, I think it might have been the second RPG I ever made. So I created a game called Webworld, which is about a giant spider apocalypse. And then I wanted to flesh out the mechanics in that, which is this system called the Pool System, which is a system I use for all my games, where there are pools of dice, and they're usually your health, and they're the dice that you roll for checks. And I really liked sort of hyper colours, and I do really like hyper coloured stuff, kind of stuff that makes your eyes bleed. I made Webworld, which was a very sort of dreary, dark game with lots of blacks and greys, and that was my first game, and I thought, this isn't really the kind of art I wanted to be producing. So I went the complete opposite end of the spectrum and made something that could be bright and gross and sludgy and greens and pinks. And I made BDSM. And the name was the sort of acronym was completely coincidental on the first game.
Yes, I see MILF and CBT here though. So yes, yeah. I realised
that it could fit into those acronyms, so I just started making expansions for it using different acronyms.
Fair play.
And actually, Below Dwelling Sewer Mutants can be said to the tune of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Oh, I can hear it now. I can hear it now. God damn it.
Ah, nice. So...
Jay?
Hello?
Do I have to keep on poking you, Jay?
My mic is kicking my ass right now. So, how did you approach the world building of BDSM? That's going to give me everything.
Well, I was inspired by old films like Chud and specifically sections of a movie called Fast Times at Nukem High, which is a trauma parody of the movie.
Fast Times at Richmond High?
That's the one, yeah, it's a parody of that. Where in Fast Times at Nukem High, there is a radioactive dump underneath the high school, and it's producing mutants in barrels. And so there's a whole sort of sewer world down there. And I think it's kind of like a throwaway joke in the movie, and they don't even really come up into the school above. But I just kind of love that idea of like a second world underneath where everything's kind of sludgy and. And now, in hindsight, I'm actually thinking it's very much like Futurama with the mutants down below.
Nice. Very nice. So, how do you start character creation? Where do you start with this? You say they can change drastically, but you know, where do you start with a character?
So, to make a character, you roll your stats, which are very simple. You roll your pool, which is your pool of dice, and then you roll on a mutation table three times, and that's your starting mutant. So the mutation table will give you a few random mutations. So let me just bring up the book. It is where is the tables? There they are. Right, so say I roll... Say I'm making a character and I roll a d10 and I get a 1. So my character is going to have a crystallized body. Webbed feet. And an oil gland making them iridescent and slippery. So now I've got this strange crystally frog creature with oily skin. And that's my mutant, and I'm done. I've made a character.
Oh. Super quick, super easy. Nice.
And then there's a mechanic in BDSM where you can rip mutations out of yourself to heal yourself, which may happen quite often, because leveling up is not guaranteed in BDSM. So whenever you defeat something, only the mutant that landed the killing blow gets to eat their meat, and you can fight the head mutant, the one that did the killing blow, to try and steal the meat off them.
Oh, I can see the immediate PvP that would happen if we played this game.
Or they can share it, but then everyone gets a lesser level up. So there's lower mutation tables and medium mutation tables. And if they split the meat, it's worse quality mutations.
Huh.
Here's a question for you then. Yeah, that, there a point? Because we played a couple games with mutations. We're playing Blister Critters now that does have mutations in it. Is there a point where your character just becomes so mutated they're just fucked beyond belief, essentially? Like, they're, essentially they're no longer...
Sentience,
yeah, there you go.
Or...
they're just a monster.
So that's where the ripping out mechanic comes in. So you can rip a mutation out of yourself. You essentially level down. You're losing a mutation to your character. But you're healing back to full in your pool.
Oh, okay. That's a good way to avoid it, yeah.
But you can also lose mutations from taking too much damage. So if you go down to zero mutations, you are a human... and you are prey, and all the other player characters get to eat you.
Oh, delightful. Huh. I can see no downsides to this. Don't I see an opportunity.
Now, but this has come up in a game that we've played before. Can you forcibly join characters together then
can
in the mutation?
Can you forcibly the mutations?
I guess you could.
Ooh.
I mean, it's not specifically in the rules, but whenever I make games, I'm very much under the impression that if something is cool for the story, just put the rule book down.
Fair.
Yeah, that's a good way of doing it. Huh.
So.
Okay, so I have to ask, why specifically sewer mutants? Why not go above ground with mutants?
You said before you liked the idea of a secret world.
Hmm, true.
It lets me kind of use stuff from our world, like, you know, towns and discarded boats and stuff, but in a location where I kind of get to determine, you know, the end all of the location, so I get to determine what happens within this world without like removing myself so far from this world that people can't really pass you know what is the sky. So they know they're in a sewer, they know that we're kind of adjacent to the regular world, but this world is a bit weird. And I just get kind of a little bit bored with like fey worlds and stuff.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make something sort of akin to that, but fun, for want of a better word. Sorry, no offense to sort of like.
Yeah, yeah, we get what you mean.
Fairy stuff.
There's a lot of fantasy games that are very same or very you've been transported to a magical world. Here you go.
Yeah.
It's a very different vibe.
Copy paste.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really not a big fan of like sort of fantasy, high fantasy. Despite having played D&D for many years.
Yeah, actually that's something we haven't asked yet. What TTRPGs have you played and what ones are your favourites?
So obviously I played D&D for many years. It is the gateway drug for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved on from D&D to I moved on to Morkborg because I enjoyed the sort of over the top darkness of Morkborg. Ooh. It reminded me a lot of those old choose your own adventure books where you can just die by turning to the wrong page.
Yeah.
But as an RPG. And I started making RPGs because I really wanted to do a modern day setting, but I was getting really sick of D&D because I didn't want to just like hack D&D so it's just a game when a game like that probably exists. So I started trying to play Gumshoe, but I wanted to do like a cyberpunk setting, and I didn't have cyberpunk. So I downloaded the Gumshoe system and could not work out for the life of me how to translate the system to be a cyberpunk city. And it was getting closer and closer to when the campaign would start, and I thought, fuck it, I'm going to write my own. So I wrote my own rules based on what I thought an RPG should play like. And it actually worked really well, and I enjoyed playing through that whole campaign with these just random made-up rules that I did. So I thought, there's actually something there, so maybe I can translate those rules. And those rules became the pool system.
Nice.
Mm. So that's the name of your system, then?
Yes, so P-O-O-L, the pool system.
So it's worked well for you. You made a ton of games with it. It seemed real interesting, too. What were the best and worst parts of making your games?
The best parts is layout. I absolutely adore doing layout.
That's interesting, because a lot of people say that they hate doing layout.
Layout and math, those are the two things we usually hear as worst.
So, I love doing, for want of a better phrase, artsy layout. So, like, not worrying, because I didn't make a game for a very long time because I was only familiar with D&D, and I thought that an RPG had to be black text on white for like white tables. And then I obviously I saw Morkborg, and I realised, oh, okay, Johan Noor's style. I don't need to do just black text on white tables. I can do whatever I like, and as long as it's, you know, at least legible, people would enjoy it. So I enjoy making pages that look aesthetically pleasing to the DM, who's just going to be the one reading the book. And the fact that it is a game means I get to show people my art without going, hey, look, I made some art.
Yeah, makes sense.
Fair enough.
I think the thing I like least about making my games is probably the marketing. So I've made a game. I've posted it on itch.io. I've posted it. I've produced it. I've tested it. It's on itch.io. And now I've got to sit on social media for hours and go, hey, look, I made this thing. Oh, and here's another thing about it, and another thing. And it's like, unless I'm a massive corporation or a company with access to marketing money that can just put out Facebook ads and Tumblr ads and all of that, I can't get my games out there unless I am actively the person sitting there telling people about my games.
That's a common one, actually. A lot of people have said they hate having to do that part of things, just because it feels semi-soulless in a way.
Yeah.
We also tend to find that a lot of TTRPG creators are kind of like shy almost. The last thing they want to do is praise their own work, and you kind of have to if you're going to sell it.
Yes.
So, have you ever thought about doing anything along the lines of like a Kickstarter or a backer kit for something, I mean, for lack of a better term, something like much bigger, like a main massive book or something?
So I have done, I believe it's, let me just check,
Because there are physical books you've done of your games. And Matt is a noted massive TTRPG book collector.
Yeah, so most of my games have a physical version. I sell them on my Ko-Fi as a shop. I have created 9 Kickstarters so far. But they've usually been for a zine format. Recently, I did a Kickstarter for a game called Fukuzatsu, which is an insane card game inspired by the video game Balatro. But what if it was analog and you could play it multiplayer? And I wanted to make that as like a bigger thing, so like a boxed game with a hardback book and comes with its own cards. Because that's ultimately the goal at the moment, is to just translate all my games to like a 2E version of them that is a big hardback version. And there's another Kickstarter that finished that I still haven't fulfilled. I'm working on some big games at the moment, and that is the excuse for the fact that I've done 2 Kickstarters since not fulfilling Dreadfarer. But I made a game called Dreadfarer, or am making a game called Dreadfarer. And I did not intend for it to be a large game, but I'm up to 135 pages and I'm about halfway through the book. So,
oh wow, that's going to be a chonker.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway, back to the BDSM. Which is something I never thought I'd say to a...
Oh, come on, you had to know something like this was coming.
I guess. How did you go about like playtesting this? Was it one that you had out with friends? Did you give it to a bunch of people? And you know, what kind of influenced the final product with it?
So, BDSM, obviously it was the second RPG I made. When I made it, I didn't have that much of a following online. I didn't have a Discord full of people or anything like that. So I just tested it with friends. I got some friends over, played a few games, and tweaked it as needed, played a few more games. I think I went through a campaign but tweaked the game as I was going through the campaign, and they were going, oh, well, that didn't really work. And I was like, okay, so from this point onward, we'll play the rules like this and then change that in the rule book. And that's how I tested that. But now I've got this following. If I make something, I can just post it to my Discord and be like, does anyone want to test this? And they'll get back to me with a series of very detailed notes.
It's always nice to have a bit of community to rely on.
Definitely.
Speaking of which, can you give us like a highlight reel almost of some memorable moments from playtesting?
Sure. So there was a point where there were these like 2 like tiny mutant children, and one of my player characters decided to just eat them because they were a giant mouth. And I had to in the moment come up with a mutation table for just mutants, because in further expansions to BDSM I've created DNA specific mutation tables rather than size-specific mutation tables. And I didn't have one just for mutants, and these mutants didn't have any sort of features about them that fit into reptile or insect. So I had to, off the top of my head, in like behind the GM screen, just come up with 10 different mutations based on just mutants.
Yeah. What do you get without writing them down? Baby?
There was another point where one of the characters started as like a humanoid looking mutant, and over the course of one session from just eating random pieces of meat and stuff off the ground became a mass of intestines with eyes. And had just so irreversibly fucked their character that they had to kind of just collapse in a corner and die and start a new character.
Man.
Huh.
This might actually... Because these designs, they're fairly small. Hey, Matt, I think we might have found a contender for Jin.
Maybe, if you want to
run it. No, never mind. <I'm> not, no.
I have my game planned.
Fuck you. So...
I mean, that goes back to the... Sorry, just quickly. That goes back to the game... The question of before about, you know, what happens if they get too powerful? Being, yeah, one of them, as you say, turned into a bunch of intestines and just died.
It's not that they died, it's that they, as a player, decided to retire their character by just collapsing in a corner.
Death is a choice.
Dying.
They decided they weren't happy with the outcome of their mutations, and so they decided to make a fresh mutant.
They could have turned themselves into a mutant. However,
could they not... Could they not have ripped out said mutations?
I think it was their like a combination of four different mutations, and they were so close to being on zero that they didn't want to just turn themselves into a human, so they just decided to retire the character as is.
That's very fair.
Fair enough.
Now, I know you're working on fulfilling two and writing an absolute fucking chonker of a solo TTRPG. Can we expect any more acronyms that you have in mind to do?
Yes, actually. I've got one planned. Let me just bring
up. We've got BDSM, MILF, CBT, and ATM at the moment.
Yes. There it is. So I am currently not even working on just like note taking on one for S&M.
Yes.
which stands for Sardines and Muckers, and it's a fishing based expansion for BDSM. Which introduces a giant lake / sea called the it is called the Stagnant Crud.
Nice.
So it is a giant sea of radioactive waste with islands known as fatbergs that litter the crud, teeming with different mutants.
That sounds more and more gross.
Obviously, fatbergs being the mass of tissues that ends up blocking up drains.
Have you ever seen a documentary with those on them?
I have, yeah.
Those things are nasty. just fishing off of... I just put a bad image in the head. Some of the stuff you'd fish out of that.
I did get caught... Like, you know, YouTube will recommend... weird shit to you sometimes. There was the guy who cleaned out septic tanks that kept getting recommended short stuff who called them milkshakes.
Oh, I know that one.
Unpleasant, truly.
Yummy.
The poo milkshake, yes.
The blender. The chocolate milkshake.
Okay. A completely random question for you.
Sure.
If you could pick one of your games, only one, which one would it be and why?
I'll pick your favourite child here.
Oh.
The others get short.
God, that is a question. I think I would pick Bonebout. Because I feel like Bonebout doesn't get enough love, and it's one of my favourite games. It's not dark and creepy like the rest of my games, which is why I think it doesn't get quite enough love. It is a skeleton boxing tabletop RPG. So everyone plays skeletons in a world where everyone is just skeletons because... And you're always taking part in a large tournament called the Bonebout. And you're in a location where this tournament is, and that location is, you know, the campaign setting. But there's always like a mystery going on outside the ring, and you need to solve this mystery alongside taking part in the tournament and rising up for a tier system. But I created a combat system that's quite tuned, and it's essentially just punch out as a tabletop RPG.
Fair enough.
So it's 1v1 combat, and you can kind of tag in and out with the other players. But if you get downed, that's a loss for your side. And then you can save up marrow by perfect blocking to do one of your haymakers. And your haymakers are your skills, like in a regular RPG.
Nice.
But the art in it is just excellent. The art is by my friend Moa, and it's just this excellent rubber hosey style. And the layout, I specifically went and got a bunch of books on old boxing posters and then just made every page look like a different boxing poster.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, I'm having a quick look at that now. It does look... It looks incredible.
Thank you.
It captures that... I want to say... on its 70s style?
Yeah, this...
Or am I wrong with that?
This sort of like 70s, 60s style boxing... skeletons.
Yeah.
Nice.
That really does capture that quite nicely. Huh. Might have to have a look at that.
So, what advice would you give to aspiring TTRPG creators?
I would advise making a game. It sounds really silly, but just make as many games as possible to get those ideas out of your head. And just keep improving on them, because if you make an RPG, it's not going to be the best RPG that you've ever made, because it just isn't. You'll make another RPG and it will be better, and then you'll make another RPG and it'll be better, but you'll always make a better RPG. So as long as you keep making them, you'll get to that those great RPGs that you've made. That just sounds like I'm rambling.
Go for it. Go for it.
And just, yeah, just keep making RPGs and keep challenging yourself. So going, oh, I made that RPG, so I'm not going to tackle that kind of thing again. Which, just make the same RPG again. Like, if you made an RPG and it didn't hit the mark and you're not particularly happy with it, but you've done it now and you can't really unnoodle the rules, just make it again. I mean, we're not in an industry like the film industry where somebody makes a movie and then it flops and then they're not allowed to make that movie again because it flopped the first time. Just do it again. Nothing's stopping you.
That is a fair point. Well, I think we'll close this out now. Where can people find you? And, well, pick one of the games and recommend it, other than the Bone one.
Sure. So you can find me at... if you go to my link tree, which is... Give me one second. If you go to my link tree, which is linktr.ee/neonrot, it has all of my stuff on there. So there is my Blue Sky. I am no longer on Twitter, formerly known as X. I have a Patreon where I make art cards. I have a Ko-Fi, which you can buy for my physical games on, or just buy me a coffee if you want. And I'm constantly posting my new backer kit or Kickstarter on my Linktree. The Linktree has everything. If you go to the Linktree, it's got my itch.io, it's got the Instagram, it's got my email to contact me. It's harshly pink. And if I were to recommend one of my games other than the Bone one, I would recommend Fukuzatsu. It is Balatro in Rural Life with Friends. So you play poker, but you also have tarot cards, and the tarot cards are essentially the Joker cards from Balatro. You get to physically destroy and maim your opponent's poker cards and your own, and then the next time you play with the same broken deck, and there might be like Pokemon cards in your poker deck, or magic cards, or baseball cards. It's completely up to you. It is insanity.
Huh. Nice. Well, links will be in the description below, and I have an answer for a question we asked earlier, and that is yes, Tesco's does do caviar.
Oh no!
Fantastic.
What have I signed myself up for?
Yes, no. You have. Well, thank you very much for your time. We honestly appreciate you coming on and chatting about some games. And yeah,
no, thank you for having me.
Well, you're more than welcome. This has been a Pint of Cthulhu interviewing Neon Rots. Signing off. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.